Shalom, and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording of a Passover teaching by Rabbi Adam Kligfeld and by Rabbi Cantor Hilary Chorney.
We're going to spend, I don't know, 30 or 40 minutes doing some singing, some quiet mindfulness, and some study as we dig into some of the themes and the music of Pesach. It's a skill to let silence really come. It's not a skill to walk into a quiet room, but it's a skill that is harder to cultivate in our era, where we're looking at our phones every 3 seconds, to beckon absolutely nothing and just let stillness be substantive. And like any skill, it has to be worked at. And if you were once good at it, and you stop for a while, you have to work at it again. And I'm not sure it's quite at the level of Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours. But when you see people who are adept at stillness, it's actually something to behold. And Yantif and Chag is about celebration. The word Chag means really a circle dance, a gathering of exaltation. So there's something about Pesach and Yantif and Chag that is the opposite of stillness. It's raucous, it's musical, it's ecstatic. And there's something about the notion of shvut, of pausing, which we do both on Shabbat and Yantif, that's about absence, about nothingness, about pleasurable and intentional emptiness. If you want, you can close your eyes. And if you want, you can place your feet flat on the ground in front of you so you have full contact with the earth. And place your hands on your legs, palms up or palms down. And try to extract the stillness from this moment. And I mean extract because there are sounds, delightful sounds of children, being Jewish children in synagogue, and maybe distracting sounds of a machine whirring or a door opening. But you can do a silence extraction. Your mind is that powerful. To pull in and draw the contours of your experience only around the quiet, leaving everything else on the periphery. And notice how that feels in your body. And notice how it feels in your mind without judgment. Does it bring a sense of agitation because you're wondering what you're missing? You're trying to control yourself from thinking. Does it bring a sense of serenity that you didn't realize how much you wanted? Or both. And I want you to let the image or the word Pharaoh or Paro come into your mind. The enemy, our nemesis in this Exodus story, the one from whom we are freed. And I want you to let your mind build an edifice around Pharaoh with two sides. The two enduring messages from Pesach. Don't ever submit to Pharaoh again. Don't ever be a Pharaoh. Don't ever yield to the Pharaohs around us, because there are many. And don't let Pharaoh build up inside you. Perhaps nothing else is as important as that duality. When we sit on Pesach, don't let Pharaoh win. And don't win as a Pharaoh.
For a while, when our clergy team was Rabbi Kligfeld and Rabbi Ari Lucas and myself, Rabbi Lucas had a thought about what should be taught from the Bima on the first day of Pesach, and he said it should always be material that you could possibly use at your Seder. So to balance out that which is truly important and lishma and letting us let go, I'm also going to have us dancing a little bit in the territory of material that keeps us thinking even between the Seders, right? That we don't even wait until the next Seder to keep having a conversation that perhaps began around your Seder table last night. There have been so many readings and pieces of Jewish liturgy, like invented Jewish liturgy, that came out just this year. I know this because I'm keeping an open source spreadsheet that people have been adding to from around the world, and it's remarkable. There have been new Yiddish poems written. There have been new pieces of people trying to reflect and not necessarily make sense of the state of the Jewish world right now, but also to bring into a sense of relevance, which when I get to part two later this morning, I want to share what does it mean to bring relevance to an existing ritual, to an existing piece of liturgy. They're doing that by writing something new. And the style in which we're going to look at a piece on number four, the style in which this particular poem was written, is the stylistic quality of the Haggadah. The Haggadah, which has lots of cousins in its narrative form, like Avot de Rabbi Natan, for example, as an entire like proto-tractate of the Talmud, it plays with either poetry or biblical texts in the way that this piece, this halach ma'anya interpretation, plays with text. How is that? Interpolated meaning, and even more classically, interpolated questions. A piece of the song we're used to singing, and then a question. A piece of the liturgy, and then a thought. Back and forth, which presumes a certain sensibility of familiarity with the liturgy. Like, what feels familiar are those first three words. Again, source number four, this may God pass over them prayer. Ha lachma anya. Immediately, we're in the Haggadah. Immediately, we're in the place in which we lift up and present this bread, which is simultaneously and turn in turn, a bread of affliction and a bread of redemption. So we'll find out right away, the author of this poem, Rabbi Ma'ayan Belding Tzion, what is she going to do? How far will she take us into the liturgy before she asks us a question? Halach ma'anyad, this is the bread of affliction. Ze lechem ha'oni, shecheruteinu ma'ala l'ramat kedusha, that elevates our freedom, and that our freedom elevates to holiness. Di achalu avhatana, aval ma'imachenu. There we have our first evocative and provocative question in the text. Here is this bread that our ancestors ate. In the past tense, our ancestors ate this bread of affliction, and then an immediate and present question, aval ma'imachenu. But what about our siblings at this time? Mahem ochlim achshav. What do they eat now? Taking us right into the present tense. Be'ara de Mitzrayim. In that land of Egypt, which is also Metzar, a place of narrowness. Sham, b'minharot hatzarot. There, in the narrow tunnels. Hanishar b'chal lechem. Is there any bread left? And of course, what tunnels is she invoking in this poem? The tunnels that can be found like a maze beneath Gaza, the ones which Rabbi Shapiro described this past Shabbat morning, that are now being brought above ground in art exhibitions in Tel Aviv so that people can feel, bring themselves to pass through those tunnels to understand what narrowness exists there. So she's evoking the sense of narrowness and of hunger and of wondering what bread they might possibly have to eat. But now, the past, but now. Kol dichvin yitei v'yehol. This is the call to action for us from the Seder table. Everyone who is hungry, they should come and they should eat. Kol pita avesha shetashir otam chayim. Every little bit of dried up pita that gives to them, that even offers a fraction to them of life. Gamhi ta'ale l'ramat kedusha. So too should that little slice of pita rise up to be something holiness. There's a beauty in the language of the rising as well, given the flatness of matzah and this idea that we are brought low by the bread of affliction, or rather the bread of affliction shows us how low we are brought. And instead, she says, to the ramat kedusha of bread, that fluffiness. Once you eat Israeli pita, you don't go back, right? There's nothing like it in the world. And here she's saying, even those little dry crusts that are nothing like what you would want to savor, they too become a bread of holiness, just like our flat matzah, just like we have been building up for maybe even a month, the taste, so that last night, hopefully matzah felt tasty to you, like you desired it. That is the taste that she is evoking. That for somebody in the narrowness of a tunnel and the not knowing in a captivity that a crust of bread, a matzah, if you will, it becomes their elevated holy bread giving them life. Kol ditzrich yete v'yifsach. Everybody who is in need, come and be a part of our Passover, but also experience being passed over by a Holy Spirit. Bizchut avotenu v'imotenu. She inserts this notion, this feeling of plea that we get sometimes in Reshut and the poetry of our Sidur, by the merit of our ancestors, bizchut tchinotenu, utfilotenu, by the merit of our pleas and our prayers, bizchut ma'aseh ha'gvura, by the merit of the deeds of the heroes, gibor, the gvura, the heroism of our people in our homeland, ha'chesed, v'handivut, the chesed, the abundant generosity that was not earned, but rather undeserved, the generosity that we offer when we hear the cries calling out, Yifsach Alehem Malach HaMavet, may the one who is responsible, this angel who is responsible for bringing people into the world of death, not life, may they pass over, Yifsach, over them, the Yotzi'im Adonai Misham, and God should bring them out from there. And now our there is in our minds in the tunnels. Our mind is with that crust of bread. Our mind is with those who need the blessing of Pesach, of being passed over. B'yad chazakah v'zroa netuya, the language of our Haggadah, with a strong hand and with an outstretched arm. Hashana hem sham. This year, they are there. B'day oyev anachnu itam. In the hands of our enemies, and we are with them. It's a ki'ilu statement, just like elsewhere in the Haggadah. We are with them. L'shana haba'ah, in the year to come, these words that come at the very, very end of our entire Haggadah. What is her prayer? Be'ara di Yisrael yoshvim berosh hashulchan. Sitting right there in the land of Israel, at the head of the table, the figurative table, the actual Seder table. Bilvush lavan sharim v'shirei chag. dressed in white, they will sing the songs, or perhaps anachnu shirim, there's no subject there, will sing the songs of the Seder Pa'am, Yisafru Lialdehem, once. They will go on to tell their children, Hayinu Avadim, Ve'ata B'nei Chorin, we were, in the past tense, captive. Now we are free. I'm just going to add a very quick coda to this teaching and share with you that the author of this poem was once known as Jess Belding, an American student at Yale University. She was a committed anti-Israel activist when she began corresponding with a young woman named Ronnie, who became her fiancé. She converted to Judaism, and as this article highlights from Times of Israel from 2018, she converted to Zionism. And she found a love through the stories and the pictures of her now mother-in-law, who was hiding in a bomb shelter. It not only humanized it, but it broke open a love in her that had her falling in love with an Israeli, falling in love with Israel. And she graduated this year from the Schechter Rabbinical Seminary in Jerusalem. So I'm not going to have us read back through it now with that gloss, but I encourage this for you to take this with you, and whether it's in a moment of quiet today or perhaps even at your own Seder table, to come back to it and ask, what does it mean for her to write these words, Ke'ilu, as if having chosen to be a part of a people who are in the past tense and in the present tense in narrow places and are praying for the year to come to bring freedom?
Back to page one, number two, we're going to sing the Vehisha Amda section of the Haggadah to a tune that the tune we use at our Seder, and then we're going to go and look at it a little more closely. Number two. Vehisha Amda Shehamda Lavoteinu Lavoteinu Ve'lanu Ve'hi'she'amda She'amda lavoteinu Lavoteinu Ve'lanu She'lo echad bilvad amad aleinu Amad aleinu lechaloteinu Ela shebechol dor vador Omdim aleinu lechaloteinu Vehakadosh baruch hu Matzilenu, Matzilenu miyadam, Ve'akadosh baruch hu, Matzilenu, Matzilenu miyadam. So many parts of the Haggadah have been shouting out with tremendous immediacy this year, the piece that Cantor Chorny just taught about, question of Dayenu, when is it really enough to say that you're grateful for what you have when there's so much more that you feel like you deserve? This one has been speaking to me, like this little snippet that references some kind of a promise, even though the word promise doesn't appear, that same promise that stood for our ancestors, a reminder, which we don't need to be being reminded of right now, that it's not just once that people have come up to destroy us, but rather in every generation they come up to destroy us. And then this seemingly theological statement that may or may not be hard to lean into, somehow the Holy One saves us from their hands. Go back to source one. I want to learn three or four verses with you, three verses from the book of Genesis. This is from Parshat Lech Lecha. This is the scene where Avraham gets his first covenant with God. It's called the Brit Ben Habitarim. The covenant was made between the pieces because God had Abraham set up like an array of animal parts, and he walked between them, and a fire came up, and it's actually referenced in the Haggadah, but you may not linger on that section. So I want to read it to you. Vayehi Hashemesh, all of a sudden it was morning. And it was, sorry, Vigeshvara's Lavo, the sun was about to come down. The Tardema Nafla al Avram, a certain sleep descended Nafla al Avram. Vihine ima, there was an awe, chashicha, a darkness, gdola, a great awe, awful darkness, or a dark awfulness, hard to know how to translate it, nofelat alav came over him. Vayomer l'Avraham, God said to Avram, these are the words that are referenced in the Haggadah. Yadoa teida, you need to know now as you start this journey with me, as you start this covenant, this is the course and the price of this identity. Ki geri yezarecha be'eretz, lo lahem, your seed will be a stranger in a land not theirs. Breishit anticipates slavery on some level. Va'avadum, and they're going to have to serve them. Ve'inu otam, and they're going to afflict them. Arba me'ot shana, 400 years. This is in the section right around the 10 plagues, or just before the 10 plagues, that does different math games as to how many years they were actually enslaved. But we don't think about that in Parshat Lech Lecha. Enslavement in Egypt is predicted, it is foreseen, it is prophesied already before Avram even changes his name to Avraham. Verse 14, Vagama Tagoya Sher Yavodu, but the nation that will overwork you, Dan Anochi, I will judge that nation. Vacharechein, and afterwards, Yetzu Birchush Gadol, they're going to leave with great wealth. It's as if God is saying to Avram, do you want this or not? You can walk away. If you want it, just know that I'm going to make you great, and then you're going to descend. And then you're going to rally, and then you're going to be enslaved. And then you're going to come out, and you'll have a certain amount of wealth with you. And what's not said, because it's the Torah is a terse text, it's going to happen again. And that's going to happen again. That's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. One of my dear relatives and teachers, who I talk about all the time, Dr. Yisrael Eldad, who was my grandmother's first cousin, and who was really the Zionist patriarch of our family, and a tremendous scholar of Judaism in addition to being a Zionist philosopher, he talks about another scene in the story of Avram. When Avram is asked to sacrifice his son Isaac in the burning bush, right? In the burning bush, on the altar. And the scene is that Isaac's on the altar about to be sacrificed. And what replaces him? The ram, right? And we like to think, because we like stories that end well. Ah, great. Isaac got spared, and the ram got slaughtered instead. And Eldad says, in order for the narrative to make sense, there has to be an exchange. Yeah, the ram ended up where Isaac was. But guess where Isaac ended up? Where the ram was. And where was the ram? He was ne'echaz basfach. He was caught in a thicket, in a bramble. It wasn't just that Isaac got to get off the altar and say, everything is going to be great. It's the price for being alive is to live in a thicket. And that was Eldad's way of saying the Jewish people, and maybe all people, but he was speaking to our people, the price for being spared is to live in a thicket. And we've never escaped it, and we never will completely, although we try to take, on some level, the extricating ourselves from that thicket in our own hands a little more responsibly. With that in mind, look at source 3. This is from the Shibulei Haleket, Rabbi Tzidkiyahu ben Avraham Anav, 13th century Germany. So this is an old text. This is 800 years old, and he wrote a commentary on the liturgical parts of our tradition. And so he's also commenting on the Haggadah Vehisha Amda. So I'm going to start in the Hebrew. It's translated in the English, but I'm going to do it phrase by phrase. Perush Achi Rabbi Binyamin. This is the commentary of my brother, Rabbi Benjamin. I could not figure out if this is actually his brother or this is like an honorific, like my bro, my buddy. And then that abbreviation, Nun Resh Vav, it's one of many ways you can add letters onto someone's name to basically say, may his light continue to shine. Havtachat Hagula, the promise of redemption. Shehivtiach HaKadosh Baruch Hu LaAbraham, that God promised Abraham, where? In the verses we looked at. Bein Habtarim, between those pieces of meat. Ksheheralo Hashibud Ugaluyot, when God showed Abraham the enslavement that's going to happen and the exile that's going to happen. That is the very promise that stood for our ancestors in Egypt. This is the Shibulei Halekut's way of saying that phrase, he sha'amda, the thing that stood, the thing isn't mentioned. It's like almost city slickers, right? The one thing, curly, anyone? Right? The thing that stood, what's the thing? It's the thing that God said from the very beginning of this. The promise that you're going to descend and you're going to ascend. You're going to be in travail and you're going to have release. That's the promise that our ancestors experienced in Egypt. Ubavavel and Babylonia. He's going through a quick sweep of, you know, they tried to kill us, we emerged, let's eat, Jewish history. Uva Madai, Medea, which is Iran, Persia. Uva Yavan, and Greece. Vehi omedet lano be'edom, and he's still standing for us in Edom. Edom is code word in rabbinic literature for who or what? What empire? What's that? The Holy Roman Empire or Christianity at large? Because Edom ends up being connected with, it was a descendant of Esav. And the Edomites are associated, at least in rabbinic understanding, with the Romans. And the Romans turns into Christianity. So it's code word for the ongoing oppression of the Jews in Christian lands. Tzidkiyahu and Avram Anav is living in Germany in the 13th century, around the time of the Crusades. It ain't good for the Jews in Germany and in France around the time of the Crusades. So that's his reference there, meaning it happened in Egypt. It happened in Babylonia, first temple destroyed. Happened in Medea. Daniel in the lion's den. It happened in Greece. It happened in Rome, and now it's happening in Christianity. Sha'az hera lo kol hagluyot. God foresaw and showed them him all of those. V'chein mufarash b'Breishit Rabbah, as it says in Breishit Rabbah, and this is a wonderful, playful reading into the verse we read before of each of these kingdoms that are going to oppress us. So if you want to go back and forth between this comment and the verse itself, it's verse number 12. When God said, when in the Torah said the word Ema, a fear came over Abraham, that was Bavel, Babylonia. And the word darkness, Chashecha, that was Medea, Persia. And the word great, that was a reference to Greece. And Nofelat Alav, coming upon him, that's a reference to Edom, meaning that the reason why that verse is so poetic and flowery is because it's a reference to each of these terrible regimes that oppress the Jewish people. Ukshem shehera lo hashiabud, just as God showed him, Abraham, the enslavement that's going to come, kein hera lo hagula, so God showed him the redemption. Kamosha pirashu lamala, as I explain in different places, V'yacharechein yitzu b'rechush gadol. After that, God said, they're going to leave with a great wealth. Al kulan hu omer kein. God was talking about every time it happens. Every time the Jewish people emerge from lowness and degradation and devastation, we're going to have some substance, we're going to have earned it, but don't think it's going to last. Listen, I don't want to be a chicken little, but the era of general American welcoming and celebrating of the Jew may not be over yet, but it won't last forever because nothing lasts forever. It just doesn't. And certainly nothing lasts forever when it comes to the welcoming of the Jew in a foreign society. It will not last forever. What we're seeing right now might be a dip that will turn into a mountain. I don't know. It also might be a Marianas Trench that we're about to fall into. I don't have the prophecy of the book of Genesis, but I have, and Shibulei Halekut has the sweep of Jewish history to know that we have to soberly confront the fact that this is how it has always been, and we have to ask questions about how we at least protect ourselves and one another when the next wave comes. Shibulei Halekut continues at the bottom of page 2, Shelo achad bilvad amadalenu, this is not a one-time thing, kalomar, lo hamitzrim bilvad amdu lahara lanu, it's not just that Egypt did evil things to us, ela b'chol dor b'dor every generation, omdim alenu lahara lanu, they stand up to do evil to us, top of page 3, ulachaloteinu, and to try to destroy us, bechoach ota hagzeira. This part gets theologically complex. They try to destroy us through the strength of the very decree of exile, meaning that God is somehow part of that. That's hard for us to really lean into, that even in our descent, that's part of God's plan. Shenigzeru bein hagzarim, that was decreed when Avraham stood there at the beginning of Jewish peoplehood. V'hakadosh baruch hu matzilenu tamid miadam, and the Holy One, however you understand God, an actual separate transcendent force or some power in the world that comes up within us, the Holy One matzilenu tamid miadam, God finds a way to save us from their hands. Kasher
hivtachnu, as God promised us. This is very, very present right now. And it's probably both the case that those who think it's 1939 are wrong, and those who think it's 1984 are wrong. And it's probably somewhere in between, and a seesaw. We don't know which direction it's going to go. But it hasn't changed much in 3,000 years. Stuart.
It's hard to imagine why, if this prophecy is brought to Avraham as a choice, why Avraham said yes.
Yeah.
I mean, why would one say yes to this?
Yeah. Right, it's Tevye-ish, right? God, couldn't you choose someone else occasionally? Like, this chosenness, however you understand that to mean, it's getting tiring.
Why should Avraham choose a scenario whereby God is implicit in the depths to which the Jewish people will be brought?
Yeah. And God being implicated in the depths to which the Jewish people are brought can also be understood in at least two ways. Implicated meaning responsible, part of the divine plan, which has real theological challenge to us, or take the modern Hallmark card footsteps poem, with us there. Right? God was with us in Egypt. God was with us by the waters of Babylon. God was with us in the Inquisition, and God is with us today in the bunkers. So with that in mind, we're going to sing V'hisha Amda one more time with those ideas lingering. Rabbi Chorny is going to do one more thing, and then we're going to say Kaddish, because we did offer this as an opportunity to say Kaddish both to people here and on live stream. And I know of at least a few people who are live streaming, and our current ruling at Temple Beth Am is that we're including digital joiners of a minyan just for the recitation of Mourner's Kaddish. So we will say Mourner's Kaddish. But first, let's sing V'hisha Amda one more time, source number 2. V'hisha Amda, she'amda la'avoteinu, la'avoteinu ve'lanu. She'amda, she'amda la'avoteinu, la'avoteinu elanu. She'lo echad bilbad amad aleinu, amad aleinu lechaloteinu. Ela shebechol dor vador omdim aleinu lechaloteinu. Vehakadosh baruch hu matzileinu, matzileinu miyadam. V'hakadosh baruch hu matzileinu, matzileinu miyadam. Rabbi Chorny, we'll finish up.
Everything that we do when we come to a text and when we come to a ritual experience like the Seder falls into either the category of exegesis or eisegesis. And today I want to tell you about an idea in the realm of ritual, which is one of my favorite realms, an idea of eisegetical ritual. Exegesis is when you come to a text, like the one we just came to, that piece from Bereishit. And when you get into that text, you read that text open-mindedly, open-heartedly, and see what that text is calling out to say to you. Presumably, that's what we're seeing when we look at a commentary like the one that we just read, which was 13th century commentary. And we're getting a peek into what cried out from the text to the voices that we then go back and read. And what we're reading is what they pulled out. Eisegesis is the very opposite. It's the notion that we come to the Seder this year, for example, torn, wondering, broken, off kilter, worried about the very conflicts among our people and then with our people and other people out there in the world. The idea that we already knew we needed to talk about Israel at the Seder table this year, and the question is, what pieces are asking us to look into them and to find in them these extant pieces, these pieces that are already there, printed in the Haggadot, and to see in them answers to our questions, or to see in them an empathy that the text actually has for us. Oh, look, the text says that every generation is going to face enemies. Oh, look, the text says we can be hopeful. Eisegetical ritual is when you do the exact same thing day after day or year after year. You don't change a piece of the way that you do the ritual, but the meaning is utterly different because of what you are bringing to it. Some years, we fling open the door towards the end-ish of Seder to invite in the prophet Eliyahu, and we fling open that door and think, thank God for my relative safety. Thank God I live in a neighborhood where I can fling my door open and sing Eliyahu Hanavi. I am so safe. Some years we even call out and shift the text just a little bit and say, Shfuch Avatcha, pour out your love, God, on all of the people who have helped to build this bubble of safety around us, both our own people and others. And some years we think, let's open the back door, not the front door. And even then, when we fling it open, we think, Shfuch Hamatcha, the text in our Haggadah is telling us that it's an appropriate moment for us to look out into the darkness of the night and say, God, now's your moment to protect us and to be a guardian. Ritual eisegesis is extraordinary. It lets us learn muscle memory. It's the reason why the Musaf Amidah that we'll come to in a little bit when we return to services can be exactly the same text that we read last Pesach, and we are different. The text is the same. We are different. The holiday is the same. We are different. The story from Exodus is the same. We are the ones who are different. This little poem, which has emerged from modern Israeli authorship, it's been, I've noted that it's not credited to any one individual, which somehow makes it powerful. I like to say that the greatest honor I'll ever have as a Jewish musician is if someday someone's singing the tune that I wrote and they say, no, it's just traditional. We don't know the author of it, right? So already the fame, or perhaps infamy, depending on the way that you read this poem, is profound. And here's what it says, imagining flinging open the door at that moment in the Seder. So that we said this last night, and it was something for me. It's a moment when we're supposed to be inviting the prophet Eliyahu to come and visit, and instead here is what we say. Al tavo, don't come. Al tavo, Eliyahu. Don't come, Elijah, our prophet. Baseder hazeh, to this Seder, or to a Seder, now and this time. Hakisei harek, the empty chair, meaning the empty chair that we are used to leaving empty to invite the prophet to visit. Hakisei harek, lo lichvodecha. It's not here for your sake. It's not here for your honor. It's not here by invitation to you. Hu hapa'am. That is this time. Lo lichvodecha hu hapa'am. This time, this is not for you. Nidaber achare. We'll talk afterwards. Dismissively, almost. Rak achare sheyashuvu kulam. Only after everybody returns. The empty chair is the same empty chair that we'd leave open at a Brit Milah. But to say these words is to utterly reflect how changed we are coming to the Seder this year. I hope you find looking into the Haggadah again tonight, that you can bring the wholeness of yourself, however full and however broken, and find that the text is speaking back to you in present tense.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am Los Angeles, go to tbala.org